Finding One Another by Carlo Grizzetta. Introduction to What Happened to Us. No couple begins their journey together hoping for distance, silence, resentment, exhaustion, or loneliness. Most relationships begin with hope, with dreams, with longing, with the desire to love and be loved. Yet somewhere along the path of life, many couples find themselves asking quiet questions they never imagined they would ask. What happened to us? Where did we go? How did two people who once felt so close become strangers standing in the same room? The truth is this. Wounds are part of being human. Every person enters a relationship carrying experiences, disappointments, fears, unmet needs, expectations, grief, insecurities, and invisible scars. Some wounds come from childhood. Others come from betrayal, abandonment, shame, loss, trauma, exhaustion, or simply years of misunderstanding and emotional neglect. Wounds themselves are not the problem. Brokenness often occurs when wounds are ignored, deliberately or unintentionally. When pain remains unspoken, when silence replaces honesty, when resentment hardens the heart, when pride prevents humility, when fear keeps us from being seen, when we stop tending to the relationship we once cherished. A marriage or relationship does not usually collapse in a single moment. More often, it erodes quietly over time through unattended fractures and unresolved pain. But there is hope. Healing remains possible wherever honesty, humility, responsibility, forgiveness, and presence are willing to enter the room again. This workbook is not designed to shame you. It is not designed to determine who is the villain and who is the victim. It is not about winning arguments. It is about rebuilding. It is about learning how to see one another again, how to listen again, how to speak honestly again, how to heal individually and together, how to become safe enough for love to breathe again. The Life Care First process invites couples to courageously examine five foundational areas of healing and restoration. Forgiveness, what pain still needs to be acknowledged and released. Identity, who are we beyond our wounds, failures, and fears? Responsibility, what ownership must we personally accept for healing to begin? Supports, what healthy people, practices, and structures strengthen our lives? Transition, what intentional steps will move us toward restoration, growth, and hope? This journey requires honesty, it requires courage, it requires participation. As we often say throughout this process, I can give you a shovel, but if you are unwilling to dig, you will never build a foundation or erect walls strong enough to sustain your home. Healing cannot happen through information alone. Transformation requires participation. Yet even in brokenness, there is good news. The presence awaits us. For those who feel exhausted, discouraged, disconnected, or crushed beneath the weight of disappointment, you are not abandoned. The sacred invitation of healing remains available. As the ancient words remind us, the presence is close to the brokenhearted and saves those crushed in spirit. May this workbook become more than pages to read. May it become a mirror, a conversation, a pathway, a rebuilding process, and perhaps, for some, the beginning of finding one another again. Chapter We Became Strangers. The television was on again. Neither of them were watching it. Two or P-A-G, wee-wee-wee-woo, T-H-E-P-R-E-E-S-E-N-E-N-T-O-O-A-O-N-G. David sat in his recliner, scrolling endlessly through headlines and emails while Melissa folded laundry at the kitchen table in silence. The sound of the dryer hummed softly in the background like white noise covering the awkwardness that had slowly settled into their home. 29 years earlier, silence between them had felt peaceful. Now it felt heavy. Their youngest daughter had moved out 8 months ago. For the first time in decades, there were no practices to attend, no late-night school events, no college applications spread across the kitchen counter, no endless interruptions pulling them in different directions. The house was finally quiet, too quiet. For years, they had survived by staying busy. Children, careers, church responsibilities, aging parents, mortgages, sick relatives, financial stress, committee meetings, and the thousand moving pieces that make people feel productive while quietly exhausting them. They had become experts at managing life, but not at tending each other. Melissa carried the basket toward the hallway, then paused. Without looking directly at him, she asked softly, "Are you happy?" David looked up, almost startled by the question. He opened his mouth to answer quickly, automatically, the way people do when they are uncomfortable with honesty, but nothing came out. Because the truth was, he didn't know. Melissa nodded as if his silence itself had answered the question. She sat down slowly across from him. For a moment, neither spoke. Then she whispered something he would think about for months afterward. "I think we disappeared somewhere along the way." David immediately felt defensive. Part of him wanted to explain how hard he had worked, how much pressure he carried, how tired he had been, how much responsibility rested on his shoulders. None of those things were untrue, but beneath the defensiveness was another feeling he could not escape. Grief. Somewhere deep inside, he knew exactly what she meant. He remembered the early years when they would sit awake, talking for hours about dreams, fears, attraction, hope, faith, and the kind of life they wanted to build together. Back then, they had been curious about each other. Now most of their conversations revolved around appointments, groceries, finances, family updates, or whether the trash had been taken out. Somewhere between surviving life and maintaining responsibilities, they had stopped sharing themselves. Not all at once. Slowly. Quietly. Almost invisibly. Melissa finally spoke again. "I don't even know if you still see me anymore." David stared at the floor, because the painful truth was, he wasn't sure he had been fully seeing anyone lately. Not her. Not himself, not even his own exhaustion. He had spent so many years trying to provide stability that he never noticed how emotionally absent he had become, and Melissa had spent so many years trying not to need too much that she slowly stopped asking for connection altogether. Neither of them were evil. Neither of them intended harm. They were simply two human beings who slowly drifted into survival mode while assuming there would always be time later to reconnect. But now, later had arrived, and they were sitting across from a stranger they once loved deeply. Reflection reading, the slow drift. Most relationships do not collapse in one dramatic moment. They erode quietly, through postponed conversations, unspoken disappointments, emotional exhaustion, busyness, caregiving, financial pressure, parenting, stress, phones, television, schedules, responsibilities, and the thousand little distractions that slowly consume our attention. Often couples believe they are still connected simply because they still function together, but functioning is not the same as intimacy. Two people can raise children, pay bills, attend church, sleep in the same bed, share responsibilities, and still feel profoundly alone. Beneath the visible marriage exists another marriage, the emotional marriage. The emotional marriage is built through curiosity, affection, vulnerability, listening, tenderness, admiration, attention, emotional safety, and shared presence. And when those things slowly disappear, couples often begin living beside one another rather than truly with one another. This drift is rarely intentional. Most people do not wake up one morning deciding, "Today I will become emotionally distant." Instead, survival quietly takes over, and survival changes people. Some become busy. Some become numb. Some become critical. Some withdraw. Some hide in work. Some disappear into parenting. Some become emotionally guarded because disappointment has accumulated for years. Often both people are lonely at the same time while assuming the other person no longer cares, and because neither knows how to safely say, "I miss you," the silence deepens. Many long-term relationships are not destroyed by hatred. They are weakened by unattended distance. The good news is this. Distance noticed honestly is already the beginning of awakening, because healing often begins the moment two people become willing to stop pretending and start telling the truth gently. Reflection questions. Take time separately before discussing together. Write honestly, not defensively, not performatively. Honestly, one. When did you first begin sensing distance in the relationship? Two. What parts of yourself feel unseen or unknown lately? Parenting, ministry, caregiving, or exhaustion affected your ability to stay emotionally present. What conversations have you avoided for fear of conflict, rejection, or hopelessness? 5. Have you become more functional than emotionally connected? 6. What do you miss most about the earlier years of your relationship? 7. When do you feel most alone? 8. What do you wish your partner understood about you right now? 9. Have you stopped asking for certain needs because you no longer believe they will be heard? 10. What fears arise when you think about the future of your relationship? Shared conversation. Guidelines before beginning. Before discussing these questions together, do not interrupt. Do not correct. Do not defend yourself immediately. Do not weaponize vulnerability later. Listen to understand, not to win. Your goal is not perfection. Your goal is presence. Conversation prompts. What parts of life slowly pulled us away from one another? 2. When did we stop feeling emotionally close? 3. What do you think we both sacrificed during the years of survival? 4. What pain have we each been carrying quietly? 5. What do you still appreciate about each other? 6. What would help you feel emotionally safer with me? 7. Do you believe we still want connection, even if we no longer know how to reach for it? Weekly practice returning attention. This week, practice small intentional presence, not problem solving. Not fixing, not debating, simply noticing each other again. Assignment. For the next 7 days, spend 20 uninterrupted minutes together each day without phones, television, or distractions. During that time, ask one meaningful question rather than discussing logistics. End each conversation by expressing one thing you appreciate about the other person. At least once this week, revisit a positive memory from earlier in your relationship together. Optional. Take one walk together in silence without needing to fill every moment with conversation. Sometimes safety begins simply by learning to remain near each other again. Closing reflection. Relationships rarely disappear all at once. Most often, they fade quietly beneath years of responsibility, exhaustion, disappointment, and unattended longing. The moment two people become honest enough to notice the distance without cruelty or blame, something sacred begins to happen. Presence returns, and sometimes, presence is where love finds its way home again. Chapter 2, Living Beside Each Other. Angela could not remember the last time they laughed together naturally. Not polite laughter, not the quick smile exchanged in front of other people, not the kind used to avoid awkwardness. Real laughter, the kind that once made time disappear. She stood at the kitchen sink rinsing dishes while Michael sat at the counter answering emails from work, even though it was nearly 9 o'clock at night again. The television murmured softly in the living room. Two phones buzzed intermittently. The dog slept peacefully beneath the table. Everything looked normal. That was the strange part. Nothing appeared broken, and yet something inside the relationship felt painfully absent. Michael finally closed his laptop and stretched his shoulders. "Long day," he muttered. Angela nodded politely. Polite? When had they become polite? There had been a time when they would have talked for hours after the children went to bed, dreaming, touching, arguing passionately, laughing, sharing stories, wondering about the future. Now, most evenings passed in quiet efficiency. They functioned well together. Very well. Bills were paid, the house was maintained, holiday gatherings were organized, grandchildren were adored, responsibilities were fulfilled. From the outside, they looked successful, but internally, they had become something closer to roommates than companions. Not because they hated one another, because they stopped arriving emotionally. Years earlier, when the children were young, survival required constant movement. Michael buried himself in work because he believed providing financially was one of the greatest expressions of love. Angela buried herself in caregiving because everyone seemed to need something from her constantly. Neither noticed the subtle drift occurring between them. Whenever discomfort surfaced, life interrupted before they had to fully face it. There was always another obligation, another school event, another bill, another crisis, another church responsibility, another exhausted evening, and eventually they stopped reaching for one another altogether, not intentionally, gradually. Over time, disappointment became quiet assumption. Angela stopped asking for emotional connection because she no longer wanted to feel rejected. Michael stopped initiating meaningful conversations because he constantly felt like he was failing somehow and no longer knew how to bridge the gap. So they coexisted, peacefully, respectfully, lonely. That night, Angela dried her hands and sat across from him. She studied his face for a long moment. Older now. Tired. Good-hearted. Familiar. Suddenly she realized something painful. They still knew each other's schedules, but they no longer knew each other's inner world, she spoke softly. Do you ever feel like we only talk about life, but never about us? Michael looked down immediately. Not because he was angry, but because the question frightened him. He had sensed the same thing for years, but kept hoping it would somehow repair itself naturally once life slowed down. But life had slowed down, and the distance remained. He rubbed his hands together nervously. "I don't know how we got here," he whispered. Angela nodded slowly. Neither did she, but for the first time in a long time, they were finally talking about it. Reflection reading, when function replaces connection. Many couples become highly skilled at managing life together, while quietly losing emotional intimacy. This often happens gradually and invisibly. Especially in long-term relationships where survival, responsibility, parenting, careers, ministry obligations, caregiving, and exhaustion consume enormous emotional energy. Over time, couples can unintentionally begin relating to one another primarily through logistics, schedules, obligations, responsibilities, tasks, and problem-solving. The relationship becomes functional, but no longer deeply relational. This is one of the great hidden dangers in long-term partnership. Two people can remain committed to the structure of the relationship while becoming emotionally absent within it. In many marriages, conflict decreases, conversations shorten, vulnerability disappears, curiosity fades, affection becomes infrequent, and emotional risk feels unsafe or unnecessary. Not because love completely vanished, but because emotional connection stopped being intentionally nourished. Healthy relationships require more than shared responsibilities. They require attention, emotional presence, playfulness, admiration, tenderness, listening, vulnerability, and ongoing curiosity about one another's inner life. Without those things, couples often begin living parallel lives, near each other physically, far from each other emotionally. Many people quietly adapt to this distance for years. Some even convince themselves, this is just what marriage becomes. But deep emotional loneliness inside a relationship slowly affects the human spirit. People begin feeling unseen, undesirable, emotionally unsafe, unnoticed, disconnected, or quietly resigned. And because the relationship still appears stable externally, the loneliness often remains hidden. Sometimes both people are grieving the same distance while lacking the language or courage to name it. This chapter is not about blame. It is about awareness. Because emotional intimacy rarely survives accidentally. It must be protected intentionally. Reflection questions. 1. Have we become more focused on managing life than nurturing connection? 2. When was the last time I felt emotionally close to my partner? 3. What parts of our relationship feel alive right now? 4. What parts feel emotionally distant or numb? 5. Have I stopped initiating connection in certain ways? Why? 6. What emotional needs have gone unspoken? 7. Do I still feel emotionally safe bringing vulnerability into the relationship? 8. Have I mistaken peaceful coexistence for true intimacy? 9. In what ways have I emotionally withdrawn over the years? 10. What kind of relationship do I truly long for now? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. Speak slowly. Listen carefully. Avoid fixing. Avoid defensiveness. The purpose is understanding, not winning. Conversation prompts. Weekly practice. Relearning curiosity. Emotional connection grows where curiosity returns. This week is not about solving the entire relationship. It is about becoming interested in one another again. Assignment. Over the next 7 days, ask your partner one question each day that is not logistical. Examples. What has been weighing on you lately? What do you miss about earlier years of our relationship? What makes you feel most loved? What have you been carrying silently? Spend one evening together without television or phones for at least 30 minutes. Share one memory from your relationship that still makes you smile. Intentionally notice one thing about your partner each day that you may have stopped appreciating openly. Write down what you notice emotionally during the week. Noticing is often the beginning of reconnection. Closing reflection. Many relationships do not fail because love completely disappeared. They weaken because attention disappeared. People stop arriving emotionally. Stop asking questions. Stop sharing honestly. Stop noticing one another. And slowly, two good people begin living beside each other instead of truly with each other. But emotional distance, when noticed compassionately, is not the end. It may be the beginning of waking up again. Chapter 3. The third things that replaced us. Thomas told himself he was doing it all for the family. That was the phrase he repeated for years. The overtime, the travel, the constant pressure, the endless availability to everyone else. It was all for them. At least that's what he believed. Rachel believed it too for a long time. In the early years of their marriage, she admired how driven he was. He worked hard, loved deeply, dreamed big, and wanted to build a stable life for the people he cared about. And he did. They built a beautiful home, raised 3 children, stayed active in church, hosted holidays, supported aging parents, volunteered, attended school functions, managed sports schedules, survived illnesses, paid bills, built a life others admired. But somewhere in the middle of all that building, their relationship slowly became secondary. Not intentionally, gradually. At first, it hardly seemed dangerous. Life was simply demanding. The children needed attention. Work required more energy. Church leadership responsibilities expanded. Financial goals increased. Parents aged. Stress accumulated. There was always something urgent. And eventually, their marriage became the place they recovered from life, rather than the place they deeply experienced life together. Years passed quickly. Rachel stopped asking Thomas to slow down because his frustration always seemed immediate whenever she brought it up. Not explosive frustration. Worse, dismissive frustration. He would sigh heavily and say things like, "I'm doing the best I can," or, "You know how much pressure I'm under." And Rachel genuinely understood that was part of the problem. She understood so much that she slowly abandoned her own loneliness. Thomas, meanwhile, quietly believed that his sacrifices should naturally communicate love. But love that is never emotionally experienced eventually becomes difficult to feel. One evening after dinner, Rachel stood watching old home videos while Thomas answered messages on his phone again. Their youngest son appeared on the television screen as a child laughing uncontrollably while Rachel and Thomas chased him through the backyard years earlier. Rachel smiled sadly. "We used to have fun together," she whispered. Thomas barely looked up. "We still do." But even as he said it, he knew it wasn't true, not really. They still shared life, but they rarely shared presence. Their conversations revolved around obligations, updates, schedules, grandchildren, finances, church matters, health concerns, and responsibilities, but very little about longing, affection, fear, dreams, loneliness, attraction, disappointment, or emotional need. The deeper relationship had slowly disappeared beneath what both of them now privately called life. Rachel muted the television and sat quietly. Then she asked a question Thomas had spent years unconsciously avoiding. When did everything else become more important than us? Thomas immediately wanted to defend himself because from his perspective, everything he had done had been for the family. But somewhere, beneath the defensiveness, was another realization. He had spent years giving his energy to everything connected to the relationship while unintentionally starving the relationship itself. And now he wasn't sure how to return. Reflection reading, when good things quietly replace. Connection, connatural destroyed only by obviously harmful things. Sometimes they are weakened by good things that quietly become ultimate things. Children, careers, ministry, responsibilities, financial goals, community involvement, caregiving, achievement, even helping other people. These are not bad things. Many are deeply meaningful. But when every emotional resource becomes directed outward, couples often stop nurturing the relationship itself. This happens frequently in long-term marriages, especially among responsible, caring, service-oriented people. People who work hard, sacrifice, provide, serve others, and carry enormous responsibility. Over time, couples may unintentionally begin giving one another only leftover energy. The relationship slowly shifts from, we are building a life together, to, we are managing responsibilities together. This is subtle and dangerous because relationships require more than shared duty. They require shared emotional presence. Many people assume, if I am sacrificing for my family, my partner should naturally feel loved. But emotional connection is not always experienced through sacrifice alone. A person may deeply appreciate someone's hard work while simultaneously grieving emotional absence. This often creates painful misunderstanding. One partner feels unappreciated, while the other feels emotionally abandoned. Neither person is necessarily wrong. They are simply experiencing love differently while slowly losing connection. One of the greatest dangers in long-term relationships is the rise of third things. Third things are anything that slowly consumes emotional attention that once belonged primarily inside the relationship. Examples include work, parenting, ministry, hobbies, social media, caregiving, achievement, crisis management, entertainment, extended family dynamics, or constant busyness. Again, these things are not inherently harmful, but when couples stop intentionally returning to one another emotionally, the relationship begins weakening quietly beneath the surface. Many couples eventually wake up after the children leave home or retirement begins and suddenly realize, we built a life together. But we stopped building us. This realization can feel devastating, but it can also become an awakening because noticing the drift creates the possibility of choosing differently moving forward. Reflection questions. 1. What third things have consumed most of my emotional energy over the years? 2. Have I unintentionally given my partner leftover attention instead of intentional presence? 3. In what ways have busyness and responsibility affected our emotional connection? 4. What role has work played in our distance? 5. What role has parenting or caregiving played? 6. Have I assumed my sacrifices automatically communicated love? 7. What emotional needs may have gone unattended in our relationship? 8. What activities or distractions most often pull me away emotionally? 9. When do I feel most connected to my partner? 10. What would it look like to intentionally prioritize our relationship again? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This is not a conversation about blame. It is a conversation about awareness. Speak honestly. Listen gently. Conversation prompts. 7. What would help us intentionally return toward one another now? Weekly practice. Choosing each other intentionally. This week is about creating small intentional moments of emotional priority. Not dramatic changes. Intentional attention. Assignment. During the next 7 days, schedule one uninterrupted hour together intentionally. No logistics. No problem solving. No television or phones. Use the time simply to reconnect emotionally. Additionally, each partner should write a short response to this question. What do I miss most about us?
Read your responses to one another slowly.
At least once this week, revisit an old photograph album, watch home videos, or share memories from earlier seasons of life together. Do not use these memories to create guilt. Use them to remember that emotional connection once existed and may still be possible again. Closing reflection. Many people spend years building successful lives while quietly neglecting the relationship meant to share that life. Not because they stopped caring, but because survival, responsibility, and busyness slowly consumed their attention. The tragedy is not always that love disappeared. Sometimes love simply became buried beneath everything else. And buried things can sometimes be uncovered again if two people become willing to stop merely managing life and begin returning to one another intentionally. Chapter 4, The Conversations We Stopped Having. Karen used to tell Daniel everything. At least she thought she did. In the early years of their marriage, their conversations wandered endlessly through hopes, fears, insecurities, dreams, attraction, faith, disappointment, childhood memories, and plans for the future. Back then, Daniel felt like the safest place in her life. Now, he mostly felt unpredictable, not violent, not cruel, just emotionally unavailable in ways that slowly taught her to keep certain parts of herself hidden. It had happened gradually at first, she continued trying. When she felt lonely, she brought it up. Gently. Daniel would usually respond with frustration masked as exhaustion. I'm tired. Can we not do this tonight? Why does everything have to become so serious? I'm doing the best I can. Karen understood he was stressed, so she waited for better timing, but better timing never came. Eventually, she learned something dangerous. It felt easier to carry her sadness privately than risk feeling dismissed again, so she had adapted. She stopped bringing up deeper emotions, stopped asking difficult questions, stopped expressing disappointment honestly, stopped sharing certain fears, stopped telling him when she felt unwanted, stopped talking about intimacy, stopped revealing how alone she sometimes felt lying beside him at night. And because the conflict decreased, Daniel quietly assumed things had improved, but they had not improved. Silence had simply replaced honesty. Over the years, their conversations narrowed into safer territory. Schedules, finances, updates about the children, errands, family obligations, church activities, and practical decisions. The deeper emotional conversations slowly disappeared altogether. One Friday evening, they sat on the back patio while the sun disappeared behind the trees. The silence between them felt strangely familiar now. Not peaceful. Managed. Karen stared quietly into the yard before finally speaking. Can I ask you something honestly? Daniel nodded cautiously. She took a long breath. When did we stop talking about the things that actually matter? Daniel immediately felt tension rise in his chest. Part of him wanted to defend himself, because from his perspective, they talked every day. But somewhere inside, he knew what she meant. They exchanged information constantly, but vulnerability, rarely. And the truth was, Daniel had his own unspoken world too. Pressures he never voiced, insecurities he buried, fears about aging, shame around failure, exhaustion, loneliness, disappointment in himself, anxiety about the future. Daniel had spent so many years trying to appear stable that he no longer knew how to speak honestly without feeling weak. So both of them suffered quietly beside one another, protecting themselves, managing emotions, avoiding vulnerability, and slowly starving the relationship of truth. Karen's eyes filled with tears. I miss feeling known by you. Daniel looked away because he suddenly realized something painful. He missed being known, too. Reflection reading. Silence is not always peace. Many couples mistake the absence of conflict for emotional health, but some relationships are not peaceful. They are emotionally guarded. Over time, many couples unconsciously stop having the conversations that matter most, not because they no longer care, but because vulnerability slowly begins to feel unsafe, exhausting, hopeless, or unproductive. This often happens after repeated experiences of feeling dismissed, misunderstood, criticized, emotionally rejected, overwhelmed, or emotionally unprotected. Eventually, people adapt. Some become quiet. Some become sarcastic. Some become emotionally numb. Some bury themselves in busyness. Some stop asking for what they need altogether, and slowly the relationship shifts from honest connection into emotional management. Conversations become increasingly functional. Logistics, responsibilities, schedules, updates, surface-level interactions. Meanwhile, the deeper emotional life remains unspoken. Loneliness, fear, grief, disappointment, attraction, resentment, shame, emotional hunger, longing, exhaustion. Many people carry entire emotional worlds their partner no longer sees. Not because love disappeared, but because emotional safety disappeared. One of the greatest threats to long-term relationships is not arguing. It is emotional avoidance. Because avoided conversations do not disappear. They go underground. And what remains unspoken often quietly shapes the relationship for years. People begin assuming things instead of asking, protecting instead of revealing, withdrawing instead of risking honesty. Eventually, couples may know each other's routines while no longer knowing each other's hearts. It's not simply talking frequently. It is creating enough emotional safety that truth can survive between two people. That includes honesty without cruelty, listening without defensiveness, vulnerability without punishment, and disagreement without emotional abandonment. The goal is not constant emotional intensity. The goal is emotional openness, because intimacy cannot survive where truth no longer feels welcome. Reflection questions. Understand. 7. Do I tend to withdraw, become defensive, shut down, or avoid conflict? 8. What kind of responses help me feel emotionally safe? 9. What do I wish I could say honestly without fear? 10. What would healthier emotional communication look like for me? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This conversation requires gentleness. Do not rush. Do not defend immediately. Do not interrupt. When your partner speaks, your first responsibility is understanding, not explanation. Conversation prompts. 1. What conversations have we stopped having over the years? 2. When did emotional honesty begin feeling harder between us? 3. What helps you feel emotionally safe with me? 4. What causes you to shut down or withdraw? 5. Are there things you've wanted to say for years but struggled to express? 6. In what ways have we unintentionally hurt each other emotionally? 7. What would help us rebuild emotional trust and openness? Weekly practice. Listening without fixing. Many couples have forgotten how to simply listen without correcting, solving, or defending. This week is about creating emotional safety. Assignment. Set aside 30 uninterrupted minutes together 3 times this week. During each conversation, one person speaks for 5 uninterrupted minutes. The other person only listens. No fixing. No defending. No correcting details. No preparing rebuttals. Afterward, the listener responds only with, "What I hear you saying is..."
Then switch roles. Possible topics.
What has felt hardest lately? What do I miss emotionally? What helps me feel loved? What have I been afraid to say? The goal is not agreement. The goal is understanding. Closing reflection. Many relationships do not fail because couples stop speaking. They fail because couples stop telling the truth safely. Over time, silence becomes easier than vulnerability. Protection becomes easier than honesty. Distance becomes easier than disappointment. The moment two people begin creating space for truth again, without punishment, defensiveness, or emotional abandonment, connection can slowly begin returning because being fully known and still received is one of the deepest human longings we carry. Chapter 5 from Family Systems and Invisible Loyalties. Elaine loved Michael deeply. That was never the question. What exhausted Elaine was feeling like she was always competing with people and expectations that had been present in Michael's life long before she arrived. Michael's mother called constantly. His brothers relied on him for everything. His family expected holidays to revolve around their traditions, their schedules, their preferences, their opinions, and Michael rarely questioned any of it. At first, Elaine admired his loyalty. He was dependable, protective, committed, and generous. But over time, loyalty without boundaries began quietly damaging their marriage. It rarely happened through dramatic arguments. Instead, it happened through hundreds of small moments where Elaine felt emotionally secondary. Michael would cancel plans with her because his family needed something. Conversations between them were often interrupted by phone calls he insisted on answering. Private struggles in their marriage somehow became extended family discussions before Elaine even had time to process them herself. Whenever she tried bringing up how overwhelmed or unseen she felt, Michael became immediately defensive. "They're my family. They've always been there for me. You're overreacting. I'm just trying to help." And because Elaine didn't want to appear controlling or selfish, she spent years minimizing her own hurt, but internally, resentment quietly grew. The resentment was not toward his family, but toward the feeling that their marriage never truly became its own emotional center. One Thanksgiving evening, after another exhausting family gathering where Michael spent nearly the entire day managing everyone else's needs while barely noticing her, Elaine sat silently in the car as they drove home. Michael sensed the tension immediately. "What's wrong now?" he asked tiredly. Elaine stared out the window for several moments before answering softly, "I don't think I've ever really come first." Michael felt anger rise instantly, because in his mind, he had sacrificed constantly for the family. Michael felt that he had worked hard, provided stability, stayed faithful, and helped everyone to the best of his ability. But beneath the anger was another feeling he didn't want to face, confusion. Because despite everything he had done, the person sitting beside him still felt emotionally alone. And if he was honest, he often felt trapped too, caught between loyalty to the family he came from and responsibility toward the family he created. No one had ever taught him how to separate love from emotional obligation, or how guilt quietly controls people who fear disappointing others. Elaine finally spoke again, tears forming in her eyes. "I'm not asking you to stop loving them. I'm asking whether there's room left to fully love us too." Michael gripped the steering wheel silently because for the first time, he realized something painful. He had spent years trying to keep everyone happy while slowly neglecting the emotional safety of the relationship closest to him. Reflection reading. The relationships around the relationship. No relationship exists in isolation. Every couple brings entire emotional histories into marriage. family traditions, loyalties, wounds, expectations, fears, roles, cultural values, coping patterns, and unresolved emotional attachments. Many couples underestimate how powerfully family systems shape long-term relationships, especially when boundaries remain unclear. Some people were raised believing pleasing others equals love, conflict must always be avoided, family loyalty must never be questioned, emotional needs are selfish, or saying no creates guilt and rejection. Others were raised in environments where emotional expression was unsafe, criticism was constant, approval had to be earned, or emotional enmeshment blurred healthy boundaries. Without awareness, these patterns often follow people directly into marriage. And over time, invisible loyalties can quietly compete with the relationship itself. This may include prioritizing parents over the marriage, inability to establish healthy boundaries, emotional dependence on extended family, loyalty conflicts, unresolved childhood wounds, people-pleasing, guilt-driven decision-making, or allowing outside voices to dominate the relationship. Many couples never openly discuss these dynamics. Instead, they simply experience the symptoms. Resentment, emotional exhaustion, conflict around holidays, feeling emotionally secondary, lack of privacy, divided loyalties, or chronic tension. Sometimes neither partner fully understands why these tensions feel so emotionally charged, because family systems often operate beneath conscious awareness. People may genuinely love their partner deeply, while still remaining emotionally entangled in old patterns they never learned to recognize. Healthy relationships require a difficult but necessary transition. The relationship itself must eventually become the primary emotional home. This does not mean abandoning family. It means learning. Healthy boundaries, emotional differentiation, mature loyalty, and the ability to love others without sacrificing the relationship closest to us. Boundaries are not rejection, they are protection. And without protection, relationships often become emotionally overcrowded by outside pressures, expectations, and obligations. One of the most healing things couples can do is begin recognizing the problem is not always each other. Sometimes the relationship is carrying the weight of generations. Awareness creates compassion, and compassion creates room for healthier choices moving forward. Reflection questions. 4. Have I unintentionally prioritized others above my partner emotionally? 5. What family patterns may still influence me today? 6. Do I avoid conflict with family at the expense of my relationship? 7. When do I feel emotionally divided between responsibilities and connection? 8. Have I allowed outside opinions to shape our relationship too heavily? 9. What boundaries feel difficult for me to establish? 10. What would healthier emotional balance look like moving forward? Shared conversation, conversation guidelines. This chapter may touch sensitive emotions. Approach one another gently. Avoid blaming family members personally. Focus on patterns and emotional impact. Conversation prompts. 1. How have our families influenced our relationship positively? In what ways have outside expectations created stress between us? 3. Have either of us felt emotionally secondary to extended family obligations? 4. What boundaries have been difficult for us to establish? 5. What fears arise when we think about disappointing family members? 6. What does healthy loyalty look like in a marriage or partnership? 7. How can we better protect the emotional health of our relationship moving forward? Weekly practice. Protecting the relationship. This week focuses on awareness and intentional boundaries. Assignment. Together. Identify one outside pressure currently affecting your relationship. Discuss how it impacts your emotional connection. Talk honestly about what boundaries might help. Additionally, each partner, complete this sentence privately and then share. One way I need to feel more emotionally prioritized in this relationship is this week. Intentionally create one protected space for your relationship alone, free from outside demands, family obligations, phones, or interruptions. Even one intentional hour matters. Healthy relationships require protected emotional space in order to grow. Closing reflection. Love is not only tested by conflict within a relationship. Sometimes it is tested by everything surrounding the relationship. Family expectations, old wounds, invisible guilt, unspoken loyalties, outside pressures. Without intentional awareness, these forces quietly shape how couples relate to one another for years, but relationships become healthier when two people begin recognizing the patterns they inherited rather than unconsciously repeating them. Mature love is not merely devotion. It is learning how to protect the relationship while still loving the people around it with wisdom and balance. Chapter 6 that we carried alone. Victor had become very good at pretending he was fine. Most people believed him. At work, he remained dependable. At church, he stayed involved. With friends, he joked easily. At home, he handled responsibilities without complaint. Even Lisa believed he was holding up well. But she didn't know he had been waking up at 3 in the morning for nearly a year, unable to fall back asleep. She didn't know how much pressure he silently carried about money, or aging, or his health, or whether he had somehow failed his family emotionally without knowing how to repair it. And Victor never told her, not because he didn't love her, but because somewhere deep inside he believed, if I fall apart, everything falls apart. Lisa had her own hidden world, too. She missed her mother terribly since her death 2 years earlier, but after the funeral, life simply resumed moving. People stopped asking how she was doing. Victor rarely brought it up anymore, either. Not because he was uncaring, but because grief made him uncomfortable, and he genuinely thought giving her space was helpful. So Lisa learned to carry her sadness privately. At night, she often sat awake scrolling through old photographs while Victor slept beside her unaware. Both of them were suffering. Neither truly knew the depth of the other's loneliness. Over time, their relationship became increasingly quiet, not hostile, heavy. Conversation stayed surface level because deeper emotions felt difficult to access. Whenever Lisa tried expressing sadness, Victor immediately moved into problem-solving mode. Whenever Victor felt overwhelmed, he withdrew emotionally because vulnerability felt unsafe and unfamiliar. So both of them carried enormous emotional weight alone while living under the same roof. One rainy Saturday afternoon, Lisa found Victor sitting silently in the garage, staring at nothing. At first, she almost walked away. Walking away had become their pattern, not disturbing each other's pain, but something stopped her. She sat beside him quietly for several minutes before speaking. "You don't have to carry everything alone." Victor immediately felt tears rise unexpectedly, not because the sentence solved anything, but because he suddenly realized how profoundly alone he had been feeling for years, and perhaps even more painfully, how alone Lisa must have been too. Reflection reading, private pain inside shared lives. Many couples unknowingly suffer beside one another rather than with one another, not because love is absent, but because emotional burdens often become deeply private over time. People carry grief, shame, anxiety, disappointment, fear, insecurity, financial stress, caregiving exhaustion, health concerns, spiritual confusion, regret, loneliness, and emotional fatigue silently. Sometimes this silence develops because vulnerability was never modeled safely. Sometimes people fear burdening their partner. Sometimes they fear rejection. Sometimes they fear appearing weak. Sometimes they no longer believe they will truly be understood. And over time, emotional isolation quietly grows inside the relationship itself. One of the most painful experiences in long-term relationships is feeling emotionally alone while physically together. Couples may sleep beside each other, attend events together, maintain routines together, raise families together, while carrying enormous inner pain that rarely gets spoken aloud. Often both people are struggling simultaneously without fully realizing it. One person may feel overwhelmed, emotionally unsupported, exhausted, unseen. Meanwhile, the other feels inadequate, pressured, emotionally unsafe, afraid of failing. Both suffer. Both protect themselves. Both slowly withdraw, and because protection often looks like silence, couples mistakenly assume, my partner must not care. When in reality, both people may care deeply while lacking the emotional tools or safety needed to express their inner world honestly. Many people learned early in life, emotions should be hidden. Strength means self-sufficiency. Vulnerability creates danger, or pain should be managed privately. But relationships weaken when emotional burdens remain permanently isolated. Human beings were never meant to carry life entirely alone. Healthy emotional intimacy requires learning how to reveal pain honestly, receive vulnerability gently, and remain emotionally present without immediately fixing, minimizing, or retreating. Often healing begins not when problems disappear, but when loneliness inside suffering begins to decrease, because shared pain feels lighter than isolated pain, and sometimes the deepest act of love is simply saying, you do not have to carry this alone anymore. Reflection questions. 1. What emotional burdens have I been carrying privately? 2. What makes vulnerability difficult for me? 3. When I feel overwhelmed, do I tend to withdraw or seek connection? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This conversation requires patience and gentleness. Do not rush to solve. Do not minimize. Do not compare pain. Simply listen. Conversation prompts. 1. What emotional burdens have we each been carrying quietly? 2. When do you feel most alone emotionally? 3. What makes vulnerability difficult for you? 4. How do you usually respond when you feel overwhelmed or emotionally unsafe? 5. What kind of support helps you feel emotionally connected? 6. Have there been seasons where we unintentionally suffered beside each other rather than together? 7. What would help us create more emotional safety moving forward? Weekly practice, naming what we carry. This week is about reducing emotional isolation, Assignment. Set aside one uninterrupted conversation this week. Each partner complete the following sentence aloud. Something I've been carrying quietly, the listening partner should not. Interrupt, fix, defend, or immediately offer advice. Instead, simply respond, "Thank you for telling me." Additionally, at least once this week, sit together intentionally for 15 minutes in quiet presence. No phones, no distractions, no pressure to solve anything. Just remain emotionally available. Sometimes healing begins with shared presence long before solutions appear. Closing reflection. Many relationships weaken not because people stop loving one another, but because people stop allowing themselves to be fully seen. Pain becomes private. Fear becomes hidden. Exhaustion becomes normalized. Loneliness becomes silent. And slowly, two people begin suffering separately beneath the same roof. Relationships become safer when vulnerability no longer has to hide, because one of the deepest human needs is not merely to be helped, it is to be known gently in our weakness and still loved there. Chapter 7. Anger Beneath the Surface. Neither of them remembered exactly when the irritation began. At first it was small, a sharp tone, a dismissive comment, an eye roll, a heavy sigh, a sarcastic joke that carried more truth than humor. Nothing dramatic, but over time, small frustrations hardened into emotional distance. Jenna noticed it first in herself. She became increasingly irritated by ordinary things Marcus did. Leaving dishes in the sink, looking at his phone while she talked, forgetting small details, withdrawing when she needed connection, seeming emotionally absent even when physically present. But beneath the irritation was something deeper she rarely admitted honestly. Hurt. She no longer felt emotionally important to him. Marcus had his own internal resentment too. He constantly felt criticized, unappreciated, as though nothing he did was ever enough. Whenever Jenna brought up concerns, he immediately felt accused, even when she spoke calmly. He defended himself, withdrew, shut down, or became sarcastic himself. And slowly, conflict stopped being about the actual issue and became about years of accumulated emotional injury, neither of which fully understood how to address. One evening after dinner, Jenna asked Marcus if he could help clean the kitchen. His response was immediate and irritated. "I just sat down." Jenna froze, not because of the sentence itself, but because it represented something much larger inside her. Suddenly, years of emotional loneliness, exhaustion, and resentment rushed to the surface. "You always disappear when I need help," she snapped. Marcus immediately became defensive. "That's ridiculous. I work all day, too." The argument escalated quickly, not because of dishes, but because neither of them were truly fighting about dishes. They were fighting about feeling unseen, unappreciated, disconnected, emotionally alone. Within minutes, both were saying things harsher than they intended. Marcus eventually grabbed his keys and left the house angrily. Jenna sat at the kitchen table crying, not because they argued, but because she no longer recognized who they had become together. An hour later, Marcus sat alone in a parking lot staring through the windshield. Anger still pulsed through him, but beneath the anger was another feeling he hated confronting, sadness. Because if he was honest, he missed her too, missed laughing. Missed warmth, missed affection, missed emotional ease, missed feeling like they were on the same side. And for the first time in a long time, he wondered whether anger had simply become the language both of them were using to express deeper pain they no longer knew how to reveal safely. Reflection reading, anger often protects something, more tender. Many couples believe anger itself is the primary problem in their relationship, but often anger is not the deepest emotion. It is the visible emotion covering the more vulnerable issues lying underneath. Beneath anger often lives hurt, fear, loneliness, shame, disappointment, rejection, exhaustion, grief, emotional neglect, or the longing to feel important again. In long-term relationships, unresolved emotional pain accumulates slowly. Small disappointments compound over years. Feeling unheard, emotionally abandoned, criticized, rejected, unseen, unappreciated, or emotionally unsafe. When these wounds remain unattended, resentment quietly grows, and resentment changes the emotional atmosphere of a relationship. As a result, people become reactive, defensive, sarcastic, impatient, emotionally guarded, or increasingly sensitive to one another's behavior. Eventually, couples may begin fighting about surface issues, while never addressing the deeper emotional injuries underneath. Arguments about dishes, schedules, sex, parenting, money, phones, chores, or tone of voice often carry years of deeper emotional meaning beneath them. The danger is not merely conflict itself. Healthy couples experience conflict. The danger is when anger becomes chronic and unresolved. Because unresolved resentment slowly erodes, tenderness, admiration, emotional safety, attraction, and goodwill. Over time, partners may stop assuming the best about each other. Everything becomes interpreted negatively, and eventually couples begin emotionally protecting themselves rather than emotionally reaching for one another. One of the hardest truths about resentment is this. People often become harshest toward the person they most deeply wanted comfort from. This does not excuse cruelty, but it helps explain why emotional pain inside relationships can become so intense. Healing requires more than simply stopping arguments. It requires learning how to recognize deeper emotions beneath anger, communicate pain honestly without attack, listen without defensiveness, and rebuild emotional safety slowly over time, because beneath many angry relationships still exists longing. Longing for tenderness, understanding, safety, connection, and the hope that love might still feel possible again. Reflection questions. 1. What emotions usually exist beneath my anger? 2. When do I feel most emotionally reactive? 3. What unresolved hurts may I still be carrying? 4. Do I tend to express pain through criticism, withdrawal, sarcasm, or defensiveness? 5. What situations trigger feelings of rejection or inadequacy in me? 6. Have I become emotionally guarded in this relationship? 7. What do I most long for emotionally from my partner? 8. What resentment have I struggled to release? When do I feel least emotionally safe? 10. What would healthier emotional communication look like during conflict? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. Conflict conversations require emotional discipline. Do not interrupt, escalate, shame, weaponize vulnerability, or rewrite history. Focus on emotional understanding rather than proving who is right. Conversation prompts. Weekly practice. Slowing reactivity. This week is about recognizing emotion before escalation. Assignment. During the next 7 days when tension rises, pause intentionally before responding, take one deep breath, and ask yourself, what am I actually feeling underneath this reaction? Then attempt to communicate the deeper feeling rather than only the anger. Examples. Instead of, you never listen, try, I feel unimportant right now. Instead of, you don't care, try, I feel emotionally alone. Additionally, each partner should complete this sentence aloud. One thing I miss emotionally between us is, the listening partner should only listen and reflect back what they heard. No defending, no fixing. Closing reflection. Anger is often the visible expression of invisible pain. Beneath criticism may live loneliness. Beneath defensiveness may live shame. Beneath withdrawal may live fear. Beneath resentment may live grief. Many couples are not truly enemies. They are wounded people struggling to reach each other through years of accumulated disappointment and emotional protection. And sometimes healing begins the moment two people stop asking, who is wrong? And begin asking, what pain have we both been carrying beneath all of this? Chapter 8, The Intimacy We Stop Talking About. Natalie missed being touched without wondering if it would lead to disappointment. Not just physical disappointment, emotional disappointment. There had been a time when affection between them felt natural. Playful touches in the kitchen, holding hands in parking lots, lingering conversations in bed, spontaneous kisses, shared anticipation, warmth. Back then, intimacy felt connected to the whole relationship. Now it felt complicated, fragile, and loaded with unspoken meaning. Ethan noticed the distance too, though he interpreted it differently. To him, the lack of physical connection increasingly felt like rejection. At first, Ethan tried initiating more often, then less often, then cautiously, then resentfully. Eventually, he stopped trying altogether because repeated rejection hurt more than silence. Natalie, meanwhile, did not feel emotionally safe enough for closeness anymore. Years of emotional disconnection, unresolved resentment, exhaustion, pressure, and feeling emotionally unseen had slowly affected her desire in ways she barely understood herself. Neither of them knew how to speak honestly about it anymore. Every conversation around intimacy seemed to end in hurt feelings, defensiveness, or withdrawal. So they avoided the subject almost completely, and avoidance created even more distance. One night, they lay silently in bed, facing opposite directions. The room felt emotionally cold, despite their physical closeness. Ethan finally spoke into the darkness. "Do you still even want me anymore?" Natalie's chest tightened immediately, because she knew the question beneath the question, not merely, "Do you want intimacy?" But, "Am I still desired? Still chosen? Still loved?" Tears filled her eyes unexpectedly, because the painful truth was, she missed closeness too. But closeness no longer felt emotionally simple. She turned toward him slowly. "I miss us," she whispered. "Not sex, the us, the safety, the playfulness, the tenderness, the emotional ease, the affection that once flowed naturally between them." Ethan stared quietly at the ceiling, and for the first time in years, neither of them defended themselves, neither explained, neither accused, They simply sat together in the sadness of realizing how much tenderness had quietly disappeared between them. Reflection reading, intimacy, is more than physical. One of the most painful forms of distance in long-term relationships is the gradual loss of emotional and physical intimacy, and yet many couples rarely discuss it honestly. Not because it does not matter, because it matters deeply. For many people, intimacy becomes emotionally complicated over time due to unresolved resentment, emotional disconnection, shame, rejection, stress, exhaustion, aging, body insecurity, hormonal changes, caregiving fatigue, anxiety, trauma, emotional neglect, or years of unspoken disappointment. Often couples interpret intimacy struggles very differently. One partner may experience rejection, loneliness, inadequacy, or loss of desire. The other may experience pressure, emotional unsafety, exhaustion, resentment, anxiety, or emotional disconnection. Both people suffer. But because intimacy feels vulnerable and emotionally charged, couples often stop talking honestly about it altogether. Silence then creates deeper misunderstanding. One of the great misconceptions about intimacy is that it is merely physical. In reality, emotional intimacy and physical intimacy are deeply interconnected for many couples. Feeling emotionally safe, emotionally desired, emotionally seen, emotionally valued, emotionally connected often shapes physical closeness profoundly. This does not mean every couple experiences intimacy identically. People vary greatly in emotional needs, desire, expression, comfort, communication style, and physical affection, but healthy intimacy usually requires more than physical proximity. It requires emotional openness and safety. Another painful reality is this. When couples stop talking honestly about intimacy, shame quietly grows. People begin privately wondering, am I unattractive? Am I unwanted? Am I failing? Why do we feel so distant? Will this ever return? Without compassionate conversation, both partners often create painful assumptions about themselves and each other. Healing intimacy rarely begins through pressure or performance. It begins through honesty, emotional safety, gentleness, curiosity, and rebuilding connection slowly, because beneath many intimacy struggles still exists longing. Longing to feel chosen, desired, cherished, emotionally safe, and deeply connected again. Reflection questions. Disconnection related to intimacy? 4. What helps me feel emotionally safe and connected? 5. What fears or insecurities do I carry around intimacy? 6. Have unresolved hurts affected my openness toward closeness? 7. What kind of affection or connection do I miss most? 8.
How comfortable am I discussing intimacy honestly?
9. What emotional needs may exist beneath my desire, or lack of desire, for closeness? 10. What would healthier intimacy look like moving forward? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. Approach this conversation gently. Avoid blame, pressure, humiliation, defensiveness, sarcasm, or keeping score. The goal is emotional understanding, not performance. Conversation prompts. 1. How has our emotional connection affected physical intimacy? 2. What do you miss most about the closeness we once shared? 3. What helps you feel emotionally safe and desired? 4. What has made intimacy difficult or painful at times? 5. Are there unresolved hurts affecting our closeness? 6. What kinds of affection or connection feel meaningful to you? 7. What would help us begin rebuilding tenderness slowly and honestly? Weekly, rebuilding tenderness. This week is not about pressure or expectations. It is about restoring emotional warmth and safe connection. For the next 7 days, practice intentional non-demand affection. Examples: holding hands, sitting close, hugging intentionally, gentle touch, lingering eye contact, speaking appreciation, sharing memories, sitting together quietly. No pressure for anything beyond emotional connection. 32 or PAGEWUTHEPRESENCENETWRRG. Each partner complete this sentence. I feel most emotionally close to you when. Share your responses slowly and without interruption. The goal this week is not performance, it is restoring safety, tenderness, and emotional presence. Closing reflection. Many couples stop discussing intimacy long before intimacy fully disappears. Silence replaces honesty. Pressure replaces tenderness. Protection replaces vulnerability, and slowly two people begin grieving closeness without knowing how to return to it safely. Intimacy is not rebuilt through force. It is rebuilt through emotional safety, gentleness, honesty, patience, and the slow return of trust and tenderness. Because beneath many guarded hearts still lives the longing to be fully known, fully received, and deeply cherished again. Chapter 9, learning to see again. For years, Rebecca believed Jonathan no longer noticed her. Not truly, he noticed responsibilities, appointments, things that needed repaired, schedules, tasks, problems. But not her. Not the woman sitting quietly beside him, becoming increasingly invisible inside her own marriage. At first, she tried harder. She changed her hair, planned date nights, initiated conversations, suggested trips, bought books about relationships, asked deeper questions. Jonathan usually responded kindly enough, but distractedly. His mind was almost always somewhere else. Work stress, financial concerns, aging parents, health issues, unfinished responsibilities, future worries. Rebecca slowly stopped reaching. Not because she stopped caring, but because repeated emotional disappointment becomes exhausting. Over time, she adapted to emotional invisibility the way many people do, quietly. Jonathan noticed changes too. Rebecca laughed less, touched him less, shared less, retreated into herself more often. But he interpreted her withdrawal as criticism, and because he constantly felt inadequate already, he avoided deeper conversations that might confirm his fear that he was somehow failing her. So both of them slowly stopped truly seeing one another. One Saturday morning, they attended a small outdoor wedding for an old family friend. During the ceremony, Rebecca quietly watched the elderly couple sitting beside them holding hands. The husband gently brushed a strand of hair from his wife's face while she smiled at him softly. It wasn't dramatic. It was attentive. Present. Rebecca suddenly realized what she missed most was not excitement. It was being noticed. On the drive home, she stared out the window silently. Jonathan finally asked, "What are you thinking about?" She hesitated before answering, then quietly said, "I think somewhere along the way we stopped paying attention to each other." Jonathan felt immediate defensiveness rise, but then he looked over at her, really looked, the tiredness in her eyes, the sadness she had been carrying, the quiet loneliness he had sensed but avoided confronting, and suddenly he realized something painful. He had spent years assuming love automatically survived without attention, but relationships cannot thrive where people stop noticing one another. That evening, instead of disappearing into television and phones like usual, Jonathan sat beside Rebecca quietly. After several minutes, he asked something, something he had not asked sincerely in years. "Tell me how you've really been." Rebecca looked at him cautiously, as though unsure whether it was emotionally safe to answer honestly, but something in his voice felt different, present. And for the first time in a long time, she began speaking not to a roommate, co-parent, or life manager, but to someone who seemed willing to truly see her again. Reflection reading. Attention is one of the deepest forms of love. One of the quietest tragedies in long-term relationships is not always conflict. Sometimes it is invisibility. People stop noticing each other, not intentionally, gradually. Life becomes crowded with stress, responsibilities, routines, survival, distractions, technology, caregiving, and emotional exhaustion. And over time, couples may continue sharing life while no longer truly seeing one another emotionally. This often happens slowly. People begin assuming, "I already know them. Nothing has changed. We'll reconnect later. They know I love them." But human beings require more than assumed love. We need experienced love, felt love, seen love, attentive love. Many relationships weaken because attention quietly disappears. Couples stop, asking meaningful questions, noticing emotional shifts, expressing curiosity, offering admiration, making eye contact, listening deeply, or emotionally arriving with one another. Eventually, people begin feeling emotionally unseen despite years of shared history, and emotional invisibility creates loneliness. One of the deepest human longings is, "Do you still see me? Do I still matter to you emotionally?" Attention communicates value. When someone feels deeply noticed, they often feel safer, more connected, more desired, more emotionally alive. Learning to see again requires intentional slowing down. It means becoming curious again about your partner's inner world, emotional changes, fears, hopes, disappointments, growth, exhaustion, and humanity. People continue changing throughout life, which means healthy love requires ongoing rediscovery. One of the most healing things couples can do is begin approaching one another again with curiosity, instead of conclusion, because many people are starving less for solutions and more for attentive presence. 1. Have I stopped paying deep emotional attention to my partner? 2. When do I feel most emotionally unseen? 3. What helps me feel emotionally noticed and valued? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This conversation is about rediscovery. Speak gently. Stay curious. Do not rush. Approach one another with fresh attention rather than old assumptions. Conversation prompts. 1. When do you feel most emotionally noticed by me? 2. When do you feel invisible or emotionally overlooked? 3. What parts of your inner world have changed over the years? 4. What do you wish I understood more deeply about you right now? 5. What distractions or habits have pulled our attention away from each other? So what qualities do you still admire in one another? 7. How can we become more emotionally present moving forward? Weekly practice, practicing attention. This week focuses on intentional noticing. Assignment, each day this week, spend at least 15 uninterrupted minutes together. No phones, no multitasking, no television. During that time, ask one meaningful question, maintain eye contact, and listen fully. Additionally, each partner should intentionally notice and verbally affirm one emotional quality, one effort, or one characteristic they appreciate in the other person daily. Examples: I noticed how patient you were today. Thank you for caring so much lately. I still admire your kindness. I appreciate how hard you try. At the end of the week, discuss, did we feel more emotionally present with each other? Sometimes relationships begin healing not through dramatic breakthroughs, but through consistent attention returning again. Closing reflection: many people do not stop loving each other. Attention fades. Curiosity disappears. Assumptions replace discovery. And slowly, emotional invisibility settles into the relationship. But when two people begin slowing down long enough to truly see one another again, with curiosity, kindness, and presence, something beautiful often begins returning. Because being deeply noticed is one of the purest experiences of love a human being can receive. Chapter 10, Truth Without Destruction. Eric and Danielle had become afraid of honesty. Not because they hated truth, but because truth between them had become dangerous. Every difficult conversation eventually turned into one of two things, an argument or silence. So over time, they both learned to carefully manage what they revealed. Danielle stopped expressing disappointment fully because Eric immediately became defensive whenever he felt criticized. Eric stopped expressing frustration because Danielle interpreted his withdrawal as rejection. Both felt misunderstood. Both felt emotionally unsafe. Both believed the other no longer really listened. One Tuesday evening, Danielle sat quietly at the edge of the bed folding towels while Eric prepared for work the next morning. The room felt emotionally tense, though neither had argued recently. That was the strange thing. The relationship had become quieter, but not healthier. Danielle finally spoke softly without looking up. "Can I tell you something honestly without you getting angry?" Eric immediately felt himself brace internally. That sentence alone filled him with anxiety, because honesty in their relationship often felt like standing in front of incoming fire. Still, he nodded cautiously. Danielle took a long breath. "I think I stopped telling you the truth because I got tired of feeling emotionally punished afterward." Eric's chest tightened immediately. Part of him wanted to defend himself, explain himself, correct her interpretation, but another part knew exactly what she meant. Whenever difficult emotions surfaced, he often reacted from shame rather than understanding. Criticism, even gentle criticism, felt deeply threatening to him, so instead of listening openly, he protected himself. Defensiveness, explanations, sarcasm, shutting down, counterattacking. Danielle continued quietly, "I don't need perfection from you. I just need it to feel safe enough to be honest." Eric sat down slowly across from her. For the first time in a long while, neither of them seemed interested in winning, only understanding. After several moments, Eric spoke softly, "I think I've been protecting myself so much that I stopped protecting us." Danielle's eyes filled with tears, not because the sentence fixed everything, but because honesty without hostility suddenly felt possible again, and maybe that was where healing actually began. Reflection reading, honesty without emotional violence. Truth is essential in healthy relationships, but truth without emotional safety can become destructive rather than healing. Many couples struggle not because honesty is absent, but because honesty has become emotionally dangerous. Over time, difficult conversations may become associated with criticism, defensiveness, shame, escalation, sarcasm, emotional withdrawal, contempt, manipulation, or emotional punishment. As a result, many people slowly stop telling the full truth about loneliness, disappointment, resentment, attraction, fear, emotional needs, or unhappiness. Not because those feelings disappear, but because vulnerability no longer feels safe. This creates a painful cycle. One partner suppresses honesty to avoid conflict. The other senses emotional distance and becomes more reactive or anxious. As a result, emotional safety decreases further, and eventually both people begin protecting themselves rather than nurturing the relationship. Many couples unknowingly become adversaries instead of allies. Listening becomes preparing rebuttals. Conversations become scorekeeping, pain becomes weaponized, and honesty begins feeling threatening instead of connective. One of the greatest challenges in long-term relationships is learning how to tell difficult truths without destroying emotional safety. This requires emotional maturity from both people. Healthy communication involves honesty without cruelty, listening without defensiveness, disagreement without contempt, vulnerability without manipulation, and accountability without shame-based attack. This does not mean avoiding difficult truth. Real intimacy requires truth, but truth delivered without compassion often creates further emotional injury. Many people hear criticism not simply as, "You hurt me," but as, "You are failing, you are inadequate, you are unwanted." And when shame becomes activated, people often react defensively rather than openly. Healing requires learning how to remain emotionally grounded during difficult conversations. Not perfect, just grounded. Healthy relationships are not built on pretending problems do not exist. They are built on creating enough emotional safety that truth can survive between two imperfect human beings. Reflection questions. 38 or P-A-G-E-W-E-U-E-U. T-H-E-P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E-N-E-E-T-O-R-K free. What kinds of honesty feel difficult for me to hear? 4. Have I unintentionally made vulnerability feel unsafe for my partner? 5. What fears arise when conflict or disappointment surfaces? 6. How did my upbringing shape the way I handle conflict and truth? 7. When do I feel emotionally safe enough to be honest? 8. Have I been suppressing important truths out of fear? 9. What would healthier emotional communication look like for me? 10. What kind of listener do I want to become moving forward? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This conversation is not about proving who is right. It is about rebuilding emotional safety. During this discussion, speak slowly, avoid interrupting, avoid absolute statements, "you always, you never," and focus on emotional experience rather than accusation. Conversation prompts. 1. What makes honesty feel emotionally unsafe between us? 2. How do we each react when feeling criticized or misunderstood? 3. What communication patterns tend to damage emotional safety? 4. When do you feel most emotionally hurt by me? 5. What helps difficult conversations feel safer? 6. Are there truths we have avoided because of fear or defensiveness? 7. What would it look like for us to become allies again instead of opponents? Weekly practice. Slowing the conversation down. This week focuses on emotional safety during difficult conversations. Assignment. Choose one important conversation this week. Before beginning, sit facing one another, slow down intentionally, and agree on one goal. Goal: pursue understanding before response. During the conversation, speak in short, honest statements, avoid blame language, pause often, and reflect back what you heard before responding. Examples. Instead of, "You never care about my feelings," try, "I often feel emotionally alone when we disconnect." Instead of, "You always shut down," try, "I feel afraid when our conversations suddenly stop emotionally." Additionally, at least once this week, ask each other, "What helps you feel emotionally safe with me?" Listen carefully. The answer matters deeply. Closing reflection. Truth alone does not heal relationships. Truth carried with compassion does. Many couples stop being honest because honesty became associated with punishment, shame, defensiveness, or emotional danger. But intimacy requires more than peacekeeping. It requires the courage to tell the truth gently and the maturity to receive truth without destroying one another. Because love cannot fully survive where honesty is unsafe. Healing often begins the moment two people become willing to protect the relationship more than their own defensiveness. Chapter 11, Through Grieving the Marriage We Lost. Susan cried in the grocery store parking lot for reasons she could not fully explain. Nothing dramatic had happened that day. No argument, no betrayal, no major crisis. But while loading bags into the trunk, she suddenly realized something painful. She missed a version of her life that no longer existed. Not only the early years of marriage, the feeling of those years, the anticipation, the closeness, the emotional ease, the sense of being chosen, the hopefulness, the way she and Mark once reached for each other naturally. Now everything between them felt heavier, more cautious, more tired. Mark felt the grief too, though he rarely named it that way. He mostly experienced it as disappointment and emotional confusion. He missed laughing together, missed affection, missed feeling wanted, missed feeling emotionally successful inside the relationship. But instead of grieving openly, he stayed busy. That had always been his way of coping. Keep moving. Keep functioning. Keep distracting yourself from what hurts. One evening after dinner, Susan sat quietly flipping through an old photo album while Mark watched television nearby. Pictures of vacations, birthdays, young faces, children small enough to carry, arms wrapped around each other effortlessly. At one photograph, Susan stopped and stared silently. Mark noticed tears running down her face. He muted the television immediately. "What's wrong?" he asked softly. Susan looked at the photograph again before answering. I think I've been grieving us for a long time. That sentence hit Mark harder than he expected, because if he was honest, he had been grieving too. Grieving. The marriage they once had, the people they once were, the closeness they lost, the years that disappeared into survival, and the painful realization that time alone does not protect relationships. He sat beside her quietly. Neither tried to immediately fix the sadness. For once, they simply allowed themselves to acknowledge it honestly. The marriage they once knew had changed. Some parts had been lost, some wounds had accumulated, some innocence had disappeared. But strangely, naming the grief out loud together made the distance between them feel slightly less lonely, because grief shared honestly often becomes softer than grief carried alone. Reflection reading. Naming the loss honestly. Many couples experience grief inside long-term relationships, but few recognize it clearly. People grieve. Lost closeness, lost trust, lost innocence, lost time, lost affection, lost dreams, lost emotional safety, lost versions of themselves, and lost versions of the relationship. Sometimes couples spend years trying to solve relational pain without first acknowledging that grief exists beneath it. But grief changes people, especially unspoken grief. Many long-term relationships quietly accumulate sorrow over time. Disappointments, betrayals, missed years, emotional neglect, unresolved wounds, caregiving exhaustion, illnesses, parenting stress, financial hardship, infertility, aging, emotional disconnection, and dreams that unfolded differently than expected. Often both people adapt outwardly while grieving internally. Some become emotionally numb. Some become angry. Some withdraw. Some overfunction. Some stop hoping. Some quietly mourn the relationship while continuing to live inside it. One of the hardest truths couples face is this. The relationship cannot fully heal by pretending nothing has changed. Sometimes couples must first grieve honestly. What was lost? What was damaged? What never happened? And what they both endured. Grieving does not automatically mean the relationship is doomed. In fact, grief honestly acknowledged often creates the possibility for deeper authenticity moving forward. Because relationships cannot return to earlier versions of themselves unchanged, life alters people. Pain alters people. Time alters people. The goal is not recreating the past perfectly. It is learning whether two people can meet each other truthfully in the present. Many couples secretly long to go back, but healthy healing often requires something different. Not returning backward, but rebuilding forward with greater honesty, maturity, compassion, and emotional awareness than before. This process requires mourning, because what is ungrieved often quietly controls relationships from beneath the surface, and grief denied often becomes resentment, numbness, or hopelessness. But grief spoken honestly can become the beginning of acceptance and renewal. Individual reflection questions. Personal reflection. 9. What fears arise when I think about our future? 10. What would emotional healing look like moving forward? Shared conversation. Conversation guidelines. This conversation is about honesty, not blame. Allow sadness to exist without immediately fixing or minimizing it. Grief often needs witnessing before healing can begin. Conversation prompts. 1. What parts of our relationship have we both been grieving? 2. What seasons of life changed us most deeply? 3. What losses or disappointments have affected our connection? 4. What do you miss emotionally about us? What still feels valuable or worth protecting in this relationship? 7. What would rebuilding look like realistically, not ideally, for us now? Weekly practice, honoring the story honestly. This week focuses on reflection rather than fixing. Assignment, together, look through old photographs, revisit meaningful places, or talk about important memories from your relationship story. Not to create guilt, not to compare the past to the present harshly, but to acknowledge what was beautiful, what was difficult, what changed, and what still matters. Additionally, each partner write a private letter beginning with, "Something I've been grieving is..." You may choose whether to share the full letter or portions of it together. The goal is not emotional intensity. The goal is emotional honesty. Closing reflection. Some relationships do not need immediate solutions first. They need space to grieve honestly because people cannot heal what they refuse to acknowledge. Long-term love often carries sorrow alongside beauty, disappointment alongside devotion, loss alongside loyalty. Sometimes healing begins. Not when couples pretend everything is fine, but when two people finally sit beside each other honestly and say, "Yes, something precious was lost, and we both feel it." Chapter 12, Still Here. The cabin was smaller than they remembered, or maybe they were simply older now. Lena smiled faintly as she unpacked groceries onto the kitchen counter, while Aaron carried bags inside from the car. 23 years earlier, they had spent part of their honeymoon there. Young, hopeful, affectionate, certain love alone would somehow carry them through everything life might bring. Life had brought more than either of them expected. Children, stress, debt, illness, job changes, sleepless nights, funerals, arguments, distance, loneliness, silence. Years where they loved each other but struggled to feel connected to each other. There had even been a season, one neither of them spoke about lightly now, when divorce felt frighteningly possible. Not because either wanted destruction, but because both felt exhausted from trying to survive emotionally inside a relationship that no longer felt safe, warm, or alive. And yet somehow, they were still here, not perfect, not magically restored, not untouched by pain, still here. That first evening at the cabin, they sat quietly on the porch listening to wind move through the trees. No television, no grandchildren running through the house, no work emails, no church obligations, no distractions demanding immediate attention, just silence. But unlike previous years, the silence no longer felt hostile. It felt thoughtful. Aaron finally spoke. "I used to think relationships failed all at once." Lena looked over at him quietly. He stared out toward the darkening lake and continued, "Now I think most people just slowly stop reaching for each other." Rai's sentence described them perfectly. Not villains, not monsters, not failures, just two human beings who became tired, wounded, distracted, defensive, and emotionally lost for a while. She reached for his hand gently, something she had not done naturally in a long time. Aaron squeezed her hand softly and continued, "I wish I would have noticed sooner how lonely we both became." Lena nodded. For years, she believed she was the only one grieving the relationship. Now she realized. Aaron had been grieving too, just differently. The stars slowly emerged overhead while they sat together quietly. No dramatic promises, no unrealistic declarations, no pretending the past had not happened, only honesty. And strangely, honesty now felt less frightening than avoidance. After a long silence, Lena finally whispered, "I don't think we can go back." Aaron nodded gently. "No," he said, "but maybe we can go forward differently." For the first time in years, hope did not feel like pressure. It felt quiet, realistic, tender, not built on perfection, built on presence. And perhaps that was enough for now. Reflection reading. Love after illusion. Many couples spend years believing healthy relationships should feel effortless if love is genuine enough. But long-term love is not sustained by emotion alone. It requires attention, honesty, humility, repair, emotional courage, boundaries, tenderness, forgiveness, grief work, curiosity, and intentional presence. Relationships change because people change. Life changes people. Pain changes people. Responsibility changes people. Loss changes people. The goal is not preserving a perfect version of the past forever. The goal is learning whether two imperfect people can continue choosing honesty, compassion, and emotional presence as they evolve through life together. Some couples eventually realize they do not want to continue the relationship, and sometimes separation becomes the healthiest path available. But many couples are not truly asking, "Can we become perfect again?" They are asking, "Can we become emotionally alive and honest together again?" That question matters deeply. Healing relationships does not mean never hurting each other, never struggling, never disappointing one another, or never feeling distant again. It means learning how to notice disconnection earlier, return toward each other more intentionally, communicate more safely, repair emotional injuries, and remain emotionally present even during difficulty. One of the most mature forms of love is realizing your partner is not your enemy. They are another human being carrying fears, wounds, disappointments, exhaustion, longing, and hopes, just like you. Relationships often begin healing when couples stop trying to win against each other and begin protecting the relationship itself together. This does not erase pain, but it creates the possibility of rebuilding trust slowly and honestly. Some relationships fully recover. Some partially recover. Some lovingly end. Some transform into something quieter but healthier than before. There's no single perfect outcome, only the ongoing invitation toward truth, compassion, presence, and emotional responsibility. And sometimes the greatest breakthrough is simply this: two people becoming willing to reach for each other again. Reflection questions. 1. What have I learned about myself through this relationship? 2. What patterns do I want to change moving forward? 3. What does healthy love mean to me now? 4. What emotional needs do I want to express more honestly? 5. What kind of partner do I want to become? 6. What fears still exist inside me? 7. What strengths still exist within the relationship? 8. What would emotional healing realistically require from both of us? 9. Am I willing to continue practicing honesty and presence intentionally? 10. What kind of future do I hope we create from here? Shared conversation, conversation guidelines. Approach this conversation with gentleness and realism. Not fantasy, not hopelessness, simply honesty. Conversation prompts. 7. What does choosing each other realistically look like now? Weekly practice, beginning again slowly. This week is not about dramatic promises. It is about intentional continuation, assignment. Together, create one small relational practice you want to continue regularly moving forward. Examples: weekly walks, device-free dinners, monthly check-ins, shared journaling, intentional affection, prayer or reflection together, scheduled conversations, or protected time together. Additionally, each partner complete this sentence aloud. One thing I still hope for between us is, listen carefully. Hope often survives quietly beneath years of disappointment. Final reflection. Long-term relationships are rarely simple. They carry beauty and sorrow, connection and misunderstanding, joy and grief, closeness and distance. Sometimes two people slowly lose one another while trying desperately to survive life itself. But relationships are not healed through perfection. They are healed through awareness, honesty, repair, compassion, and the courage to become emotionally present again. You may not be able to return to who you once were, but perhaps something wiser can still emerge. A love less naive, less performative, less avoidant, and more honest than before. Not perfect love. Present love, and sometimes, after everything life has done to two people, the most sacred words they can still say to one another are simply, I'm still here.